The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
Story of the day has been Jaden Rashada, the much ballyhooed Florida quarterback who originally was going to Miami and then signed, we think he's signed. Yeah, we know he signed with Florida, but he is now on his way out. That is one of the most interesting stories, leaving behind reportedly a $13 million deal, or maybe it never came to fruition. Pete Thamel, hopefully with some answers. I don't know if anybody has all the answers on that. Pete, thanks for the time. I realize we should be used to headlines like this, but it's still shocking to see, isn't it?
I don't know if it's shocking, Paul. I think it's sort of a symptom of the new era that we're in, where they sort of allowed all these things to happen and didn't make any rules surrounding them. And look, there's an inherent danger when you're essentially your payroll is designated to third parties that you don't have control of and really aren't supposed to engage with in a significant way about these deals. And so it's an interesting situation at Florida with the Gator Collective. And simply put, they signed a contract and wrote a check they couldn't cash. And it's a big check, so that there's a reason that they couldn't cash it. And it speaks to something, I think, Paul, that's happening on a lot of these campuses. There were numerous instances this year of players going to their coaches upset because the collectives weren't coming through on what the money that was owed to the players. And so this is really the first high-profile recruiting example of this, which caused a significant decommitment that's going to cause a huge ripple throughout the country as Jaden Rashada, tries to wriggle his way out of his national letter of intent and decides where to go next. But I really do think the clunky nature of the system and the nonlinear nature of the process it lends itself a little bit to some of these types of things happening.
So Pete, how do you disengage, or how does he, or anyone for that matter, disengage from something like this?
So I guess there's two parts of it. The name, image, and likeness contract, I don't know how they disengage from that. I was told, made some calls today to some Gator officials that it was essentially a miscommunication where an agent was dealing with a representative of the firm, and they thought they had that kind of money, and they thought there was someone, be it a booster or whoever, to put it up, and it simply wasn't there and didn't exist. And when the family got the sense of that, they decided to leave. In the case of Florida, Paul, one interesting nuance is that because there is not name, image, and likeness in high schools like there is in California, they hadn't really dealt with these situations with recruits. Now, I was told that it's very likely that Florida ends up distancing itself from the Gator Collective, and that's happened at a bunch of schools where an initial collective pops up, it's not working, the leadership isn't in sync, and they sort of move on, they mutate, they change. That's sort of part of the frontier nature of where we are in NIL. But the Gator Collective did, more than 100 deals for current Florida student athletes, and they all kind of went okay and accordingly. This one was different because it was with a recruit. The recruit was from California, where name, image, and likeness deals are okay. And I think that's where things might have gone sideways a little bit here, Paul.
Yeah, and we'll leave it to others to figure out the impact. But regardless of what is true or isn't true, it just seems like they didn't have enough money. And in today's world, that's probably not a good look, Pete.
No, I mean, there's no way to sugarcoat this for Florida. It's a bad look for Florida. And, it's not a good look for the administration there or Billy Napier, even though they had very little to actually do with it, which is just kind of the funny disconnect that this NIL world and this collective world has created, is that the egg is on their face when it was this outside collective that promised something it couldn't deliver.
If I could direct you to the Alabama situation, there are a couple of situations down there, but the one with Bill O'Brien, number one, his contract is running out. It may have already run out. And then the search for the defensive coordinator, starting with O'Brien. I know you and Belichick and Bob Kraft hang out together. What is he returning up there? Is he going somewhere else? The Titans have been mentioned, or does anybody really know what's going on with Bill O'Brien?
Well, I think it would be a surprise if Bill O'Brien returned to Alabama, and I would have said that in August, as things went into the season. He's lived apart from his family, which has remained in Houston since he went to Alabama for two seasons there. And, you know, it has come time for a change. I've been told Alabama's been very open with that, even to recruits, that it's highly unlikely that, you know, Bill O'Brien is going to be your offensive coordinator once you arrive there. The Patriots certainly loom as, you know, the most obvious destination for Bill O'Brien. He's from Andover originally, and, he left a job as offensive coordinator at Duke about 20 years ago to go be a grunt in the Patriots building, and he worked his way up, and he has a strong reputation in that building, both with Bill Belichick and with the Kraft. So there are other NFL OC opportunities for Bill O'Brien, but I think that's his likely landing spot at this point, and I think it'd be a surprise if he doesn't end up there.
Pete, before we get to defense, this is a big spot for Nick Saban. It's very coveted as well when you think about the tree with Brian Daboll and Kiffin and Sarkisian and McElwain and all these guys that have come and gone. Before O'Brien has left the building, is there a way to describe what do you think Nick Saban is going to be looking for?
In terms of an offensive coordinator replacement?
Yeah,
Paul?
Let's start there before we get to the other side.
Yeah, okay, no, perfect, yeah. Well, I would think that Nick Saban saw the fits that that Tennessee and Josh Heupel gave him this year. And offensively, I think they'll probably trend a little bit and maybe overcorrect a little bit more that way as they go. Now, I'm not saying they're going to turn into the Baylor offense from the mid-2000s. But, one name I've heard is Josh Heupel, the Oklahoma offensive coordinator. He's obviously had success in the SEC West footprint. He's obviously, learned from Lane Kiffin and branched out to Oklahoma last year to some mixed results in a rebuilding year. But I do think that if the option schematically is to go faster or slower, my expectation is Alabama is going to end up going faster.
Let's go to the other side, which is a parlor game right now. You don't deal in parlor games. You deal with real information. What are you hearing in terms of what Saban is looking at and toward?
Well, the tree is a little bit run out of branches, so it'll be interesting to see. Does he go outside of the own tree? And by the way, it's been one of the great trees that we've seen in the last generation going forward. Never discount the people in the building, Todd Grantham. Has been in the so-called rehab program there, and he's obviously coordinated a lot of good defenses in the SEC. He's driven a few fans nuts, I think, along the way too. But that's the logical in-house candidate, and from there, I think if it's not him, it would be someone from the outside. I mean, Pete Golding was from the outside. He came from the Ron Roberts tree at Delta State. So look, you're going to run Nick Saban's defense if you go to Alabama, but don't be surprised if they don't go stay in-house if they look for some different ideas.
Yeah, and speaking of in-house, somebody who has been in-house twice is Jeremy Pruitt. He may have been there more than that. He's a name that a lot of fans are gravitating around, which brings us to the Hugh Freeze question of a couple of years ago. We don't know exactly where do you think Jeremy Pruitt fits into all this, and is he gettable considering what he left behind in Knoxville?
Without clarity from the NCAA case, Paul, it's impossible to say exactly. But I will say this, just generally speaking, about the evolution of NCAA punishments. So what we've seen in the past 3 or 4 years is hesitancy for the NCAA, be it the miserable failure of the AARP or the enforcement staff, to punish programs, meaning to give bull bans, to punish players who weren't there, didn't benefit from the violations. And I think the natural knee-jerk reaction off of that, Paul, is to further punish and more punish the coaches who were implicated and involved. And the charges leveled against Tennessee in this case are, I chuckled when I said it, because there's just, I think it's 17 level one violations, 18 level one violations, Paul, somewhere in that neighborhood. It's an astounding amount. So I just think if the NCAA case unfolds and they find Tennessee guilty of a fraction of those, number of level one violations, it'd be really difficult, even in this environment where NCAA enforcement is just sort of, you know, brushed past like a bug on the windshield, I think it would be very difficult to see Pruitt. Again, if found guilty, there's still an allegation phase and still has to be adjudicated by the Committee on Infractions and everything. I just find it difficult to believe he would get a slap on the wrist and be rolled back in, especially before the case unfolds.
And there's other names out there, of course, Schumann from Georgia, countless others. Pete,
sure.
We mentioned with another guest earlier about the portal closing, and I know you try to keep up with all this. Is there a way to encapsulate the chaos that you hear from your friends and sources and coaching about this period that is about to end, and just where we are right now overall in college football with the portal and so many other things?
Yeah, I was chatting with a recruiting guy today at a college, and he basically said, yeah, just trying to get through this free agency period. And that's really what it is. It's free agency. And I say that with no scorn, and I don't say it dismissively. Like, that's where we are in college athletics, and that's where we didn't have an evolution of rules, Paul. We had a revolution of rules. And the lack of the ability for anyone in Indianapolis to lead led the rules to change so distinctly that it's sort of, you know, like players are coming out of a portal fire hose now. And I do think there has been some progress in terms of having an open and closing of the period. That gives just a little bit less chaos, believe it or not, to this, and a little bit of structure to how it works. But the combination of the one-time transfer, the portal, and NIL, I mean, make this an unprecedented period of seismic activity in college athletics. There's no other way to say it. And I do think it sends more and more coaches to the NFL, where maybe harder to win there, but at least there are a defined set of rules that everybody plays by.
Pete Thamel joining us from ESPN. Always appreciate his time as we head to the break. We'll continue on this subject and others coming back, plus your phone calls.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's HIMS.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Back. Appreciate you being here on a Wednesday. Let's check out Dr. Fred, who is up next.
Beg pardon?
Dr. Fred, good afternoon. You're on the air.
All right. Is this Mr. Feinbaum?
Yes, Dr. Fred, this is Paul right here.
All right. Well, I talked to you twice before. I watch your program regularly.
Thank you.
It's a fine program. And I think you get a lot of different opinions circulating and thinking. And I would like to speak to the subject of, I'm not familiar with the initials, but the program that they have to pay college players.
Yeah, that is called the NIL, Name, Image, and Likeness.
All right. good. I'm 96 years old. I've been around a while. And it says in the Bible that in the end time there'll be great knowledge but little wisdom. So let me speak to this, if you will.
Sure.
I think that what we need is the college presidents to get together and show some fortitude. We should have college ball. If these players are worth what they're demanding, then they should go to the pros, just like LeBron went from the high school into the pros. And so what I'm saying is, let's keep college football pure. Let's give the players, all of them, including the linemen and the players that don't get all the publicity, some money, and let's take care of them. The ones that don't get an education, let's have a program that will bring them back to school and give them an education. Let's have a program that if somebody gets seriously injured, that he's taken care of insurance-wise. Now, I know all this is pie in the sky, but let me tell you, this program they have now is going to eventually fall on its butt. If I could write a book, I'd write a book, America Gone with the Dollar. And that's where I think we are. And I think that we need some real leadership. And I'd like to have your opinion on what I've said.
Well, Dr. Fred, first of all, I'm you didn't call for this reason, but I'm in absolute awe of you at your age engaging with us here, and we're appreciative. I couldn't agree more. There has been a dearth of leadership at the NCAA for a significant long time. In fact, I think the person who is leaving office is really part of the problem with where we are today. Not you can't blame one person, but he was such an ineffective leader. He was so shameless in his self-promotion, but inability to ever do anything, that college athletics could have addressed this 10 years ago when the train was coming down the track, but they chose to ignore it. And now they're begging Congress to bail them out. And I think you've seen a lot more than I have, but Congress is not in a hurry to bail anyone out except themselves.
Well, I certainly agree with that.
And I think right now you're to the point where you're trying to clean up the mess, which is fine and necessary, but that doesn't move you down the tracks to make any progress. So I think there's going to be a revolution. I think this thing is going to explode. It's going to be like the Big Bang. And I cannot predict where it will be on the other side, because I think college athletics, I mean, even with the story we're talking about today, Pete said it was not shocking. It's still shocking to me to see a player bail out of a university because his $13 million deal did not work out like he thought.
Well, I agree with you, and I think that it's ridiculous that as many good minds as we have, that we let TV control a college. College football is built on the alumni. They are the majority of the people who come to the games and support the team. And I think that if they want to be pros, then let them have a semi-pro and just go at it and see how many people watch it on TV.
You're right. Hey, if I could I ask you one question? I'm really curious, Dr. Fred, because you know, in everyone's lifetime, there are moments that you look back on. But in your lifetime, could you point to a moment that maybe surprised you the most, or where life changed so dramatically? I guess when you live it every day, it doesn't change that quickly. But a lot has changed since you were a young man and in college and growing up.
Well, I'd have to think on that a bit. Personally, I'm a dyslexic, and when I was able to get into medical school, why, that was a great day in my life.
Dr. Fred, I'm somewhat familiar with that, being married to one. But that had to be. How did you deal with that? Considering the amount of knowledge and information that you had to consume, and the challenge of doing that.
Well, I learned by accident. I couldn't take notes as fast as the lecturers did, so I would take down what I could, and then as soon as I would go to my room and I'd take a separate notebook and I would fill in from memory which I had a good memory, what I didn't get down, and that reinforced the lecture, and then of course I studied from those.
Oh,
but
man.
I think that was what helped me the most.
What final question? I apologize for interviewing you, but what type of medicine did you practice?
Well, I was a general surgeon.
Wow.
I practiced general surgery for 39 years, and then I did industrial medicine for 11 more. I practiced actual practice 50 years.
That is remarkable. Well, I can't tell you how honored we are that you would call us again. I remember the first time or two that we talked, and I look forward to many, many more. Thank you for sharing your knowledge with us.
Well, I appreciate you letting me give my viewpoint. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Fred. 96 years old. I think that is the new record for the oldest caller. 50 years of practicing medicine. Yeah, that's a lifetime. I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy. Well, you don't have to answer that. But I could talk to guys like that all day about what they've experienced. Born what? In 26? Is that right? Did I do the right math there? 27? Yeah, that was the year the Yankees won the pennant in the World Series with Babe Ruth. We'll take a break. Much more to come right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And welcome back. As some of you may have seen this morning in the Wall Street Journal, headline that said the NCAA needs new revenue, but likely won't get it from college football. The author is Rachel Bachman, and we are delighted to say hello to Rachel. First of all, Rachel, it's great to talk to you again. It's been just a little bit too long since I've seen you or talked to you, but thanks for being on.
It's a pleasure, Paul. Thanks for inviting me.
Great to have Rachel on. Rachel was a guest on the show back in the old days when before we made this move, and it's just a historical fact that Rachel, when ESPN hired us, she actually broke the story in the Wall Street Journal. but you don't remember that, Rachel.
I like that. Wow, that's suitably off-track.
For the record, it was not nominated for a Pulitzer Prize, but it should have been.
No, life is not always fair, Paul. This is what we have to accept.
Rachel, let's talk about something that really does matter, not what happened 10 years ago, but what you wrote about today. And it I don't know, I'm a fan of college football, and the NCAA often disgusts me. So can you explain what's really going on here? And I'll act like I don't know anything about this subject and I'm a partisan. So what's this all about?
Sure. Well, in a nutshell, the NCAA makes most of its money from a giant contract with CBS Turner for the men's basketball tournament, which is great. It's a very stable contract, but it's not going up much, and it's going to last for another 9-10 years. Meanwhile, college football, as you know, has been skyrocketing in value in terms of broadcast rights. 9 years ago, leaders of major college football created the college football playoff, and the bottom line is revenues for college football are exploding. And the NCAA, for a number of reasons, its costs are going up. It wants new sources of revenue, and many people among them, NCAA members, want to ask college football for help. And it is a sort of strange piece of legal history that major college football does not have to share its broadcast rights revenue with the NCAA. So that's the state of play right now.
And Rachel, you're right, as the contracts go up, but they're with individual leagues, while the NCAA contract is all-encompassing with CBS and Turner. So I guess the question is, not to you, but to the people that with whom you've spoken, why should college football bail out the NCAA?
That's a great question. One of the things that one of the points they've raised is the NCAA incurs a lot of football-related costs that football doesn't directly help with. So the basketball tournament, as you mentioned, it encompasses all of Division I, so all that money kind of, in one way or another, sort of flows down to everybody's idea, but not so with college football. And so, for instance, when someone sues because they said they got a concussion playing college football and they want someone to compensate them, one of the targets of that lawsuit might be the NCAA. So the NCAA gets sued a lot. They've also been sued for college athletes who want to be able to make money from their name, image, and likeness. As we know, the NCAA has to pay for that legal defense. A lot of those lawsuits originate among college football players in part, and yet college football doesn't directly pay for those legal costs, which, you know, a couple of years ago, just for example, the NCAA's legal fees, I think, were about $68 million. So this is not like chump change we're talking about. These are significant costs for this organization that, you know, oversees hundreds and hundreds of schools.
And Rachel, as you also point out, I mean, these are not like a group of people that don't have anything to do with the other ones. You're talking about conference commissioners who may be, you know, part of the CFP or in the SEC or the Big Ten's case, be at the head of the table for individual contracts, but their programs also participate in the NCAA. And in Greg Sankey's case, he's not only, the leader of one of the top conferences in the country, but he's the co-chair of the Transformation Committee, which is recalibrating the NCAA. How does all this get squared at the end of the day?
That's another good question. I think that right now there is a conflict in these two things. You know, the NCAA, like I said, it's basically two revenue lines, right? And the NCAA overall revenue line is going up pretty gently, and college football's revenue line is just exploding. And so as long as there's that tension, I think you're going to have people saying, hey, football, you should pay up. You should pay more than you're paying, which is really nothing direct. But, you know, the bottom line is because of this, you know, I mentioned this legal decision. This is a Supreme Court decision, as you probably know, Paul, 1984, where the NCAA was, the court ruled, illegally restricting the number of college football games that could be broadcast on TV. And what that effectively did was hand this control to the conferences. And that's where we are. So I think, you know, college football has the law on its side. And so really the only reason it would change what it's done up until now is because many of its fellow NCAA members say, you know, demand it essentially. And we're not there yet, but you know, we'll see.
Rachel, there was a time when that NCAA contract sounded like a just like an unbelievable amount of money. It still is, but I guess when you start comparing it with what everyone else is doing, what is that number, by the way? I know it's in the billions, but.
Yeah, it roughly works out to about $1 billion a year. And, you know, the big thing with that is it's a long contract. You know, it's, like I said, 9 or 10 more years. You know, the Big Ten alone, for instance, you know, they just signed this big deal. The Big Ten alone, you know, just, I guess they're going to, what, 16 members? Their today. Deal is going to be $1 billion a year. So that gives you a sense. And that deal is about triple its previous deal. So the increases are just like leaps and bounds for these football contracts, where this basketball contract is basically increasing kind of roughly at the rate of inflation or a little behind the accelerated rate of inflation right now.
Rachel Bachman with us from the Wall Street Journal. Rachel, just from if I could go back to football for a second, we just completed the season. Obviously, from your view, and you talk to so many different people throughout the year covering various issues, this NIL part, we're talking about a story today involving a player reportedly not being able to connect on a $13 million deal. You've covered sports for a while, not nearly as long as people like me, but just watching this thing explode, what has it been like just from your own eyes?
It's really mind-boggling, the amounts. And some of those amounts are a little hard to believe. I think some of them might be a little overblown, but it's a free-for-all right now. And I think the challenge is that the NCAA, who we've just been talking about, is so resistant to building any kind of structure that resembles a professional league, you know, like organizing a union or something like that. But in the absence of that, what we're going to have is this just complete Wild West. And I don't think it's necessarily bad for the players. I think many people have come to acknowledge and accept that this is good for the players. Now, they're generating these, like we just said, these enormous revenues for the conferences. I think many people have come around to say, you know, it probably is fair to share this with the players, at least some of it. And yet it's just so disorganized now that I worry that some players are probably actually underpaid by some measures because it's just so fractured. And others might get into situations where, you know, maybe they go someplace they wouldn't have otherwise gone because of an NIL deal, and then it ends up not being a great situation for them. I mean, it's just sort of all over the place. And I hope that the NCAA might look a little bit farther down the road and think about ways to organize this, because right now it's really, I think it's just leaving a lot of people with just sort of making things up as they go along.
Finally, Rachel, I mean, everybody you talk to in the college sports arena is trying to find a solution to NIL. Of course, they could have done something about it years ago. They didn't. They're leaning on the government. You tell me, and I realize that this was not the genesis of the call here today, but that seems like a slippery slope to depend on what's, you know, the folks in Washington to bail you out.
I agree. It seems rather risky, and I think this speaks to how committed the NCAA still is to something that resembles the old amateurism model. And I just wonder if that's the right way to go, given how quickly things are changing. And also, just as a practical matter, I mean, if you want something done, is your first impulse to go to Congress? I mean, just look at the recent history. It's difficult to get. I mean, it's difficult to elect a speaker. I mean, it's just basic functioning is difficult. So I think given how the wide range of NIL bills we've seen proposed, it's going to be hard to find a majority of people to agree to a list of conditions. And then, you know, will the NCAA like it if they do it? I mean, that's the other thing. Maybe they'll come up with something and the NCAA won't like it. I mean, will they still be in support of it? It's tough to say, but I support your premise that this might not be the highest functioning problem solving body at this moment.
Well, there's a new sheriff coming to town. He comes from, I wouldn't say the new president comes from Washington. He was the governor of Massachusetts, which is a long way. Rachel, it's great to talk to you again. Thanks so much for making time.
It's a pleasure. Thanks so much, Paul.
Thank you. Rachel Bogman from The Wall Street Journal. We've had a lot of guests here today, and we've enjoyed many diverse and varied opinions. We'll get to back to your phone calls right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
And we had a pre-show tweet about the best quarterback. And look who responded. Gus Malzahn saying the very obvious Cam Newton. Gus, of course, was the OC when Cam won the national championship. We do not have any confirmation whether Gus tweeted that from the Waffle House, though. But we can tell you with great authority that Larry is the next caller.
Hey, man, I want to say something real quick about this guest you had. It's John Adams.
Yeah, John Adams from Knoxville.
Hey, yeah, you guys apparently don't read up or don't study up on nothing.
No.
Before he comes in here on your show.
What did he say
he
that upset you,
We're a bunch
you,
of morons that listen to this show as far as Alabama fans. But, man, check it out. I keep up with it because there's nothing else to do right now.
Okay, Larry, what did Mr. Adams say that upset you so much?
No, he said Alabama has no big-name running back. That's a damn lie. Justin Haynes, number one running back in the country. You got him out of Georgia. Got him right out from under Kirby Smart. And he says they don't really have any receivers. We got Corey Brooks, and we got number three. I can't remember his name. What's his name, buddy, from Georgia?
Jermaine Burton.
Yeah. And so every guy rattles on about we don't have any quarterback. And, well, who does right now, man? Everybody's searching. I mean, even what's this boy's name and number one went to Texas. He's even dropped from number one. He ain't no good to say anymore.
You talking about Arch?
Yeah, but we beefed up the D, man. We got 6'4", 340, 330, 6'6". I mean, Saban went after a hell of a recruiting class.
Larry, I think this was Nick Saban's best recruiting class.
Yeah, and this guy's out of it, man. I wish he would talk to me. Put him on.
Well, you know, he's got the Larry. I this is one time we're in agreement. I think Adams just took an unnecessary shot at Alabama there.
Yeah, he makes himself look stupid because he's supposed to be intelligent man.
I don't think John was primarily talking about Tennessee.
Yeah, well, he said Alabama, and you know, like that lawyer Paul you had on. You know why they don't wear their collar real tight, you know,
what's
keep
that?
Their foreskin coming up their neck. But I'm gonna tell you.
Larry dropping some dimes on us here.
Yeah. Ooh.
Larry, this is lawyer, you're coming in with A material tonight.
He can get a quarter point. He won, good luck with that.
Larry, I take it from you that you're tired of everybody stomping on the Alabama grave. I mean, you're ready to fight back, aren't you?
Yeah, man, I'm ready to duke it out with anybody you put out there, except for our man, because he ain't gonna listen to nothing. He keeps interrupting you, and I got tired of that.
Well, that was on me. I should know better than to argue with him.
Yeah, you should know better. He's going over top. He's missing Jim from Tuscaloosa.
I said that a minute ago, Larry. You know his problem. If he can't talk about Jim, he's got nothing to talk about.
Yeah.
He needs a foil. And with, I mean, he lived off of Jim. He's lived off of Jim for 10 years.
Yeah.
Jim is not giving him the time of day right now.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.